There is a low-level but lingering debate that persists within our congregation. In fact, this debate has existed in every church of which I have ever been a part. And my colleagues in ministry report that they too get dragged into this never-ending, never-settled brouhaha in the congregation. And the issue at hand, the issue has to do with how do we as a congregation conduct ourselves in the moments before the worship service begins? As we gather, should we sit quietly in sacred reverence as we prepare our hearts and minds for the worship of God? Well, that seems like a good thing to do. Or should we use this time, this opportunity, to visit with our friends that we haven't seen for a week or more, strengthen the bonds of the congregation? Well, that seems like a good thing to do. And the tricky part of this discussion is both sides are right. Both have a valid argument. And it really just comes down to what kind of person you are. According to the work of the Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung, there are two types of people in this world, introverts and extroverts. Working in the 1920s, 100 years ago, Carl Jung, who was also a younger colleague of Sigmund Freud, developed a classification of personality types. And at the top of his classification are extroverts and introverts. And Jung's work has been used to help us better understand one another, and it has become the basis of such tools as the Myers-Briggs type indicator. Just as a note, not all experts agree with Jung's theories. I, however, have found that they are helpful in helping me understand how people operate. So, what are extroverts and introverts? Well, the answer has to do with energy. Where do people get their energy? Extroverts derive their energy from other people. There is nothing they like more than a large social gathering where they can careen from person to person, shaking hands, slapping backs, and telling stories. The tops of their tanks, this fills the top of their tanks and leaves them feeling like a toddler guzzling espresso. An introvert, on the other hand, in the same situation, may have indeed enjoyed the party, but they leave feeling somewhat drained. And after the experience of being around so many people, need a quiet time in which to recharge. Now, the common misconception is that introverts are shy, socially awkward misanthropes. This is not true. Some are, but extroverts can be these things as well. Many introverts, however, will agree with the words of the French playwright Jean-Paul Sartre, who said, "Hell is other people at breakfast." While introverts seek time to be alone in order to recharge, extroverts, when left alone, may wilt and fade. They will seek out other people or at least grab their cell phones. An example of an introvert and an extrovert from Scripture are the brothers, Jacob and Esau. The book of Genesis describes them like this. When the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man living in tents. Our nation, America, is an extroverted country with about one quarter of the population being introverted and the rest largely extroverted. Politics, as it should be no surprise, is dominated by extroverts. However, the very, very introverted president, Calvin Coolidge, is known to have remarked, "Don't you know that 4/5 of all our troubles in this life would disappear if we would just sit down and keep still. Spoken like a true introvert. Within our congregation, we have some strong introverts, and we have some strong extroverts, and then there are just a lot of you there in the middle who exhibit characteristics of both. It's a classic bell curve. There is nothing right or wrong about being introverted or extroverted. It just is. It's like being male or female, left-handed or right-handed, Ford versus Chevy, designated hitter or no designated hitter. You just one or the other. The past 2 years with COVID have been especially rough for churches. The extroverts weren't happy because the COVID protocols prevented them from gathering and hugging. Mask and social distancing ruined the social component of going to church. On the other hand, you would think that this type of environment would have the introverts flocking to church. But you'd be wrong because, they would have been, except that we gave them the option of staying home and watching online, alone, by themselves, happy as could be. COVID's been a double whammy for the church. During the season of Lent, I am preaching this series of sermons on spiritual practices. Last week, we looked at the practice of fasting. Today, I want to consider the practice of solitude. In the Gospels, we find many instances where Jesus himself sought out time to be alone. His ministry, in fact, began with him spending 40 days in the wilderness, alone, fasting and praying. That itself is the hallmark of spiritual solitude. On the night before, he chose the 12 who would accompany him throughout his ministry on earth, Jesus spent the night alone in prayer. And when he learned about the death of his cousin John, who was beheaded by Herod, we are told that Jesus, quote, withdrew from that place in a boat to a deserted place by himself. Jesus even instructed his disciples after they returned from a mission of preaching and healing to come away to a deserted place all by yourselves and rest a while. And in another place, we read that Jesus would withdraw to deserted places and pray after healing crowds himself. And then on the night before his death, he sought the solitude of the Garden of Gethsemane in order to pray. There are many, many more examples, but it is clear that Jesus regularly sought out time of intentional solitude. This is not to say that Jesus was an introvert, but that instead he did practice the discipline of solitude. So, what is solitude? Solitude is simply a state of being alone. And we've all had solitude thrust upon us with COVID social distancing, and if you were quarantined, even more. But as a religious practice, solitude is deliberate. It is when we seek out a time and a place in order to be alone to commune with God. It can be as little as a moment on a crowded bus. Or it might be a week in a mountain cabin. Spiritual solitude is when we push aside all the distractions and the diversions and the temptations and choose to empty our lives. Just as an introvert will seek to be alone in order to recharge, a person in spiritual solitude seeks to recharge their spiritual battery. In solitude, by emptying ourselves of distractions, we make room in our lives for the divine. As I said, there are numerous accounts of Jesus seeking solitude, but the one I'd like to focus on today is the account of Jesus walking on water. This story takes place immediately after Jesus has performed the miracle of feeding 5,000 people with only 7 loaves and a few small fish. After this meal, after they had cleaned up, Jesus puts the disciples in a boat and sends them around the lake with the promise that he'll catch up with them later. He then retreats up a hill to pray, and he's there until dark. But during this time, a storm has gathered over the lake, and out in the boat, the disciples are battling the waves as the boat is blown further and further from the shore. They are afraid that they might sink. And if they might sink, they're afraid that they will become the subject of a ballad sung by Gordon Lightfoot. You'll get it. They fight the storm all night. And then at daybreak, Jesus comes to them walking across the water. And understandably, this scares the disciples more than the storm. They're certain they're seeing a ghost coming to them. They got the waves and the storm, and they're about to die, and now there's a ghost appearing there. But Jesus says to them, "Take heart. It is I. Do not be afraid." Peter replies, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And so Jesus invites him to do so, and Peter then steps over the gunwale of the boat and onto the water. He takes a few steps, but quickly realizes the impossibility of his situation, and he begins to sink. He cries out to Jesus, "Lord, save me," and Jesus catches him by the hand. Jesus says to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" Jesus pulls Peter into the boat and the wind dies down. The disciples worship Jesus and proclaim, "Truly, you are the Son of God." This familiar story has some important lessons for us. First of all, it begins with Jesus seeking solitude. He climbs a mountain in order to pray. Why a mountain? Probably because, well, that's where he was least likely to encounter anyone. It's a place where he could be undisturbed. And there on that hill, he prays. Now, some might say, "Where's the solitude in that? Isn't prayer just talking?" No. As we will discuss in a couple of weeks, prayer, which is also a spiritual discipline, is more about listening than it is about talking. Prayer is not taking a shopping list to God. Prayer is opening up ourselves to hearing God's voice, to being filled with God's holy presence. So Jesus, having spent some time now in solitude, being refreshed with God's Spirit, heads down to find the others. Out in the boat, tossed about in this tempest, their situation, the disciples' situation, has now become a metaphor for the chaos and the distractions that continually stress our own lives. The disciples are so overwhelmed that they cannot conceive of the possibility that Jesus could be walking towards them on the waves. They are filled with doubt. And I would argue that Jesus was able to do this because, exactly because, of his time of solitude. Because reflecting on my life, I know that in those moments, when I have felt especially close to the holy, at those moments when my spiritual adrenaline is pumping, I have felt that I could walk on water if I wanted to. It's the runner's high of faith. And then there is Peter, who is so confident that he can also walk on water, but he sinks because He has not taken the time to displace the distractions in order to make room for the divine in his life. Jesus says that he has doubt. The doubt are the distractions. Now, there are innumerable ways for us to find solitude. Just go sit in a quiet spot in your house. Take a walk. Climb a mountain if you've got one. Go out on a boat if you've got one. Take a drive. Walk the dog. Come here and sit in the sanctuary. Turn off the phones and the tablets and remove the headphones and be alone. Some of my colleagues like to spend several days at a monastery for their solitude. But solitude's not just about being quiet. Anybody can sit in a quiet room. Solitude is about pushing aside the noise in our lives and listening to the quiet. It's an intentional act in which we invite God to be with us. In the Old Testament book of Kings, the prophet Elijah is running for his life. He hides out in a cave on Mount Horeb. And there, God comes to him. In the safety of the cave, Elijah can hear a great wind raging outside, a wind so strong that it was splitting mountains and breaking rocks in pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of sheer silence. And that was the Lord. Not in the chaos, not in the noise, not in the distractions, but in the silence. For any of us, the first time attempting spiritual solitude can be frustrating, even terrifying. I mean, there's the possibility, what if I meet God? Or the possibility, what if I don't meet God? Solitude, like every spiritual discipline, it takes practice. It takes discipline. So stick with it. You'll get better, and the results will amaze you. I'd like to conclude with another instance where Jesus goes up a mountain to pray. This time, he takes Peter, James, and John with him, and as he prays, he is changed. Jesus is transfigured. He glows. And then, standing there beside Jesus, are two heroes of the faith, Elijah and Moses, two prophets who each knew what it was like to be in solitude with God. And as they all stand on that mountain, a voice comes down from a cloud, and the voice commands, "This is my Son, the Beloved. Listen to him."